We're going to go ahead and get things kicked off. I am your host, Ariana Shannon, Brand Marketing Director here at Sales Intel. And today we are here to talk about a continuation through our go-to-market partnerships roundtable. Identify the best fit partners that actually drive ROI with you. And why this topic in particular? Well, when we were interviewing over 100 B2B leaders this past year, we've discovered that partnerships came out as a resounding channel. It was the number one channel for B2B companies in 2024. This is where everyone is saying and betting their pennies to say, we want to use partnerships to grow our pipeline. We believe in this channel. We believe in the power of partnerships. And that's why we are here with a few of our extra partner practitioners to truly understand and dig deeper into this topic to learn how do you choose your partners? What's the right audience? How do you find that best fit? Because if you choose the wrong partner and you go after the wrong audience, it's not going to be a successful channel for you either way. So to have this discussion, we have some wonderful guests with us today. We have Jesse, Adam, and Sam. Jesse, we're going to start with you and give you a brief chance to introduce yourself because it's your birthday. So happy birthday.
Oh, thanks.
Happy to have you here.
Yeah. Hey, everyone. I'm Jesse. I'm the CEO of Fluency. We help uncover partner referral revenue from everyday conversations. And, you know, I'm here because I am Sam and Adam's biggest fan. So let's go.
All right. Well, Adam, why don't you go ahead then? You give us a brief introduction to yourself.
Yeah, I'm more of a fan of Jesse and Sam than Jesse is of us. I'm the head of marketing partnerships at Uncommon. Recently made the move from the tech SaaS side of life over to the professional services system integrator side. And so it's been fun transition moving from a licenses consumption thinking to quality delivery and impact. So it's fun.
Awesome. And then last but not least, Sam with Invisory.
Hey, everybody. Fun to see some familiar faces. I also am Jesse and Adam's biggest fan. And just to say it again, HBD to Jesse. So pumped to be celebrating on this webinar with you. So I'm Sam. I'm Chief Growth Officer here at Invisory. Invisory, we consult partners on how to have successful marketplace partnerships. So everything from building your listing to transacting and co-selling, et cetera. They can be very overwhelming. So excited to have this chat.
Awesome. Well, now that we've done the introductions, I'm going to do everyone's favorite thing and I'm going to stop sharing because I don't like conversations with a bunch of screens unless they actually have something to say. So our conversation is more, well, conversation based. So we're going to go away with the slides and actually just get right down into it. And so, Adam, we are going to start with you today. I would like for you to tell me how Uncommon identifies your best fit partners. How do you understand which potential partner is the best one to go to market with and why?
So for us, it's really baked into our DNA. So Uncommon is around 12 years old. It started as Asia Strategies. I only here the last 4 months. I was originally with the team for its first 5 years, had that tech gap, and now I'm back. What's really interesting coming into a new role for partnerships, every single one of our opportunities that we work involve partners, both tech partners that the product that we may be integrating or implementing, but also other service delivery partners who are all, we think of them as our co-opetition. And so the way that we start looking at partners is not who should we involve a partner in this deal. It's always just what is the best team to bring together for this opportunity. It's not about if, it's about who. And so the other thing that's nice for us is a lot of our opportunities are higher enterprise that are like 7 to 9 figure opportunities that are multi-year projects. And so there's a little bit more forecasting that we can do. So we really start with partners of looking at mutual pipeline of key accounts, existing relationships, not things that are pie in the sky, but actually how we know that we have a role to play there, and then looking at each other's overlaps and gaps within those opportunities. of saying, I can do this 15% portion of what that client is going to need over here, but I need somebody else that does this other thing a lot better than I do. And so that way, the final piece is how we can piece together the best win team, the best delivery team. Because again, from the services side, I have to not only worry about selling those licenses up front and then what that renewal a year from now is going to look like. I've got to look at who can staff this project, who can deliver quality day in, day out, especially when we may be on site with the client and operate as a team of one where there are six different companies all on the same contract, but operating as one team.
So a lot of different criteria that you're saying in there, especially when it comes to delivery, getting things out the door, making sure that you're meeting your goals. Sam and Jesse, I'd love for you guys to jump in as well. If we had to boil it down using some of what Adam has just shared with us, what are the top three criteria that you use to evaluate your potential partnerships?
I can go. I didn't want to overstep up. Jesse was going to talk. So I think a few things. First of all, starting with customers, which we just kind of talked about a little bit, but like, I think a lot of times we go to look for new partners just in the market, and that can be very cold outreach feeling. So if you have customers, asking them, like, if we're talking tech partnerships, who else is in your tech stack? Or if we're talking SI partnerships, like, do you have SIs that currently support your business? And that's a really like warm lead, if we'll call it, leading indicator on where to start. And I think another thing that's often overlooked is you may have on paper the most perfect partner when it comes to like overlap in ICP. They fill white spaces in your technology, but if they're not willing to work with you and you don't have mutual action plans or goals previously discussed where everybody's willing to put in the same level of work, then that partnership's not going to work. So that's a little bit of a softer side of the equation of having those conversations up front, meeting one of what does success look like for you, partner? Here's what it looks like for me. Can we jointly agree to work towards those goals together? Jesse, what do you think?
I think it's a little different for me, honestly, because I started my partnership career at Apple, right? And so like, I could be partners with anybody I wanted. I had the brand awareness, like people were stoked to be partners with Apple. Whether that was, you know, useful or helpful for them or not, is up for debate. But the point is like, I didn't have like a really like a cold outreach problem. If Apple wanted to be partners with Salesforce, like Apple was partners with Salesforce, and it was announced at Dreamforce with like two of the biggest names in tech, right? But leaving Apple and starting my own business and wanting, and it's a partner tech business. And so I kind of lean towards like, we probably should care about partnerships like upfront, right? there's so many partner tech businesses. Sorry about the center stage thing. Otherwise I'm just very far away, it feels like. Part of being a partner tech business, there are so many of them that don't focus on partnerships, that don't do it well. And it looks kind of not great. Right? It's so much better if you're a partner tech company who's embraced partnerships from the beginning. And that's what we're trying to do at Fluency. But the problem with being so small is that there is a perceived imbalance of value, right? So like, if I go to choose a partech company. If I go to like, I'm like blanking on partech companies at the moment. Anyway, like a partner stack, or I go to a Crossbeam or something like that. They have, you know, thousands of customers and hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars in ARR. And I'm just getting started. And if I go to them with a proposal for a partnership, because I can see that there's like a value gap that I fill as a bridge, I have to be really careful about how I weave that story, because if they're not thinking about value gaps and bridges, and they're really only thinking about how much ARR are you going to bring me from all of your customer base, I'm never going to be able to create that partnership. I have to be able to find the companies that are out there that I fill a gap for, because that's my value, right? Is a technical gap. It's not a revenue gap yet, right? But if I can find those right partners that are missing a piece of their technology and they're looking at, do we buy, do we build, or do we partner? I'm hoping to find that like niche of companies that are like, we're willing to partner on this and we see the value you bring to it. And that means that I don't have 500 partners, right? I have like two. And it's amazing to have two at my stage. But I have to try to step up and bring as much value as I can to that partnership, even if it's not in revenue or dollars.
And I think what Jesse just said is so important. And a lot of people, to your point, come into partnerships often because that's what we're measured on. But like, what kind of pipeline am I going to drive? What kind of ARR am I going to drive through this partnership? And it's not always that linear. It could be like, this partner is an awesome co-marketing partner because they have resources on their team that I don't, to like put on a great webinar like this, to help lead and build an event that I can just show up to with a few dollars. And then like all of a sudden I have pipeline. So it's not always like sourced, influenced, account mapping, intros. Like that's great, but we have to be a little bit more creative about what type of partnership you're trying to build. And to Jesse's point, what value it brings. And it's not always just straight account mapping co-sell.
Just to give an example of that, we're starting to do an in-person event series. And while I had senior leaders in one session going through like more presentation and networking kind of content, I had a tech partner that came in to deliver a training in another one of our buildings for more of like staff hands-on keyboard folks. And we recorded both of those sessions. Now we have a recording that is on-demand training that, first of all, our own team can do and get better at that. It happened to be a generative AI skill set. Like, great. So, but that also is, that company is far larger than we are. And now I'm able to do a little bit of post-production on that content, deliver back to them. They just invested in flying three people out in developing the content. We had the sweat equity of, we had the facility, we did the recording, we did the post-production, and now they can have this marketing content that they put out through their distribution channels that has a reach that we could never hope to have. Mm-hmm. This is a way that everybody won in the scenario. And even if we never did an opportunity together, we all clearly got more ROI out of it than we put dollars in.
And that brings up a really good point, because of what I've heard thus far of what are those criteria is, one, that you're aligned on what success looks like. And then two, that you're filling that gap. But then how often are you assessing reviewing that performance? So is it, we're going to be partnering with this organization for that one time and create this piece of content, or we're going to continue to create content. How often are you evaluating the partnerships that you have to see if they're driving that ROI for you? And then what are some of those performance indicators?
For us, it's because we're working enterprise deals that are like 18 months to 3 or 4 year sales cycles. We do less frequent reviews of the partnerships. And it's not formal, but I'd say we probably do them annually, in the sense of when we're looking at the next set of opportunities that we're going to go out after, and we're looking at what our gaps are and where we need to bring certain partners in, that's the moment when we're evaluating, was the quality of the delivery from that partner in the past, was that of great quality? Were they responsive in the co-sales process, both bringing relationships and technical solution? And because we're delivering, you know, 25 to 100 page proposals, did they actually jump in and help create those final products? Or were they just, giving lots of comments, but not actually doing the hard work that needs to go into having that winning proposal? those are the things that go into it. And what really shines for a partner is when we start looking at our 18 to 36 month pipelines, is when we know there are multiple places that this partner fits and they're truly a strategic partner. There's a place for some tactical partnerships in those like specialty role filling places. But we're going to do a heck of a lot more with the partners that we know we have ongoing projects and opportunities together.
I'll just say too, I'm cracking up at Jesse's chat because yes, it depends. And again, it goes back to like, what kind of partnership are you trying to accomplish here? Like, if you're doing just a straight co-marketing partnership, how often you check in and what kind of KPIs you're measuring is going to be different than if you're doing a strategic partnership with Salesforce. But I do think it's really important to be thinking about not only for your own sake and for the success of the partnership, but also for your job security as to like what's happening in that 18 months, as Adam just talked about, like, what are the leading indicators to show that this is successful and we're making the right directional movement? So I'm just going to stay within the marketplaces because that's where I spend my days. But like, you're not going to enter a marketplace and have an immediate pipeline full of leads. Like, unfortunately, that's not the way. So one leading indicator to think about is like, how many individual Salesforce or AWS sellers have I met with and enabled on my ISV solution and the gaps that it filled? And maybe that's the first 3 months of your role. Have a quota of meeting with 50 people a month. And then you go back and you start to ask for like, is there anybody in your patch that this fits? So like, looking at, you can't just look at the finish line as the metrics that you're measuring. You have to look at all of the stop gaps up ahead of that and be very vocal about that to your internal team and to your partner.
Yeah, I think it depends, but also revenue, right? So yes. Like, if the leading indicator of partners, if a leading indicator of partner source revenue is partner manager activity, then like the partner manager activity is the behavior that you want to drive as a result of the incentive. And so it then if you have a co-marketing partnership, do you have a partner marketing qualified lead? Like, is that a thing that's set up in your partner operations? Shout San Antonio. you know, if co-selling is important to you, have you set up the entire function, which truthfully, like, co-selling is probably the heaviest lift. Mm-hmm. And I think people underestimate how difficult it is to co-sell, and they jump into marketplaces. I'm sure Sam sees this all the time. I know Sam sees this all the time, where companies will literally like join a marketplace and be like, I don't understand. Like, why don't people want to talk to me? Why don't they want to co-sell with me? Why are they not hopping on all these calls? They should be giving me all these leads. And like, they're completely like missing the whole point of an enterprise sale, and how to co-sell is literally the hardest thing to do in partnerships, but it's the first thing people think of. I think honestly, because the best marketing in partnerships has been Crossbeam, and Crossbeam is used to co-sell. Mm-hmm. But it's not used very well to co-sell. We know this, right? Like, it's very, very difficult to get an overlap and then go through a motion without having already set that sort of thing up. But ultimately, like, it's pretty easy to go from co-sell to revenue. Like, that's an easy straight line. It's much more difficult to go from partner marketing to revenue. It's much more difficult to go from enablement to revenue. It's all of the functions that have to go into actually getting to that revenue line are very dotted and crossed and wiggly. And being able to actually capture them means that you have to set a goal. Right? Like, what is the purpose of our partnerships department? And I think that like overarching question gets missed all the time when partnership teams are created, because somebody was like, well, outbound's not working. And in a panic, they're like, oh, partnerships, right? And they never think about like, what is the purpose of our partner program and what are we best suited to do? Because another, like, in if you're a tech partner, then the number of integrations enabled will be a KPI that may or may not drive revenue, right? Like direct, like top line pipeline, right? Or top of funnel pipeline. And it'll certainly have an impact on NRR, but do you know that? Like, are you measuring it? Is it in your CRM for a CSM to actually go and talk about? We just partner operations has just been like super top of mind, if you can't tell. So sorry, that's a long ramble.
No, I think it's such an important point, and that's where I was going to go to. And just to take that even further of like understanding why your partner program exists, but making sure that everybody has the same answer. from the executive team down, I see Antonio put in here, but culture to be aligned. Like, that's so true. You cannot run a partner program in a silo. And then like your CEO is like, well, you're supposed to drive 750,000 in pipeline this quarter, and your CMO is like, well, where are my leads? And your product guys, well, where's my integrations? And it's like, well, hold on, what's the ultimate goal of this partner program, and what are we all jointly marching towards? And that in and of itself can be a big lift that, to Jesse's point, many people miss, and they don't take the time to align on those internal teams.
And then to follow that, the resources being brought to bear to actually achieve what those goals are. Player coach fails in, like, you wouldn't hire one salesperson to be your VP of sales and your SDR and your AE and your CSM, but we do it all the time in partnerships. And so being able to stand up to within your organization and be able to advocate why you, in order to achieve those goals, it takes an investment. And that takes some work, but it's work that needs to be done. And being able to articulate then all of the support pieces that enable that path to success, the products and the process, that the assets that are needed throughout there, that's the reason why one person cannot do all of this.
And I love where you all are taking this conversation, because of course I said, hey guys, here's our set left of questions. I'm going to be asking you these questions and we're going to go through them. And the next one that we had was, how do you handle conflicts or challenges with partners? But what I'm hearing more is that you guys may have already answered that, of the conflicts that arise through partnerships probably start because you're not aligned.
I'd say so. But I also think that you can't be afraid to break up with a partner, because time, as Adam just talked about, if you sit in the partner seat, you don't have 5 minutes to spare. And so spending a cadence with a partner who's not performing, and based on everything we just talked about, like, you've set goals from the beginning, you've had mutual action plans, you've been very articulate about like, here's my goals, here's yours. You can't be afraid to say, hey, this isn't working for whatever reason. Like, let's reconvene 6 months from now, whatever. But like, time is money. So I
think that's an interesting take for strategic partners. But I think that like the Snyder method, this is what I call Corey's method.
Okay. I was like, is this some like scientific thing that I don't know about?
Now I'm marketing Corey's method.
PM.
Snyder method.
On board.
I should TM it for him and like give it to him for his birthday or something like that, right?
$1 license fee.
As long as he has it on the website somewhere first, right? Then he can TM it. Antonio knew that I was about to quote Corey. Of course I am. So I think that's like breaking up with partners is important if you have a strategic alignment, right? Like where you've sat down together and negotiated like
yes.
on a track level. Hey, we're going to do these things together. And if it's not working, like break up and go find a different strategic partner. But if you're someone like Corey, who's trying to onboard like literally hundreds of agencies, like just to get the distribution, then if a partner isn't performing, you sort of just like drop them into the bottom 80. Right. And like, and that's okay, because the incentives for the top 20 are really great for those top 20. And like, it doesn't matter to you if you're spending time or not with the bottom 80. I hate that that's like the split, But that's just the reality of how this works in this particular kind of partnership, right? So sometimes it's not worth having the conversation. Sometimes you just like let them sit in the uninterested bucket, and you go spend your time with the ones who are interested and like continue to iterate and build for them. But in terms of like conflict, unless it's like really strategic, like the conflict is sort of like, well, piss off. Like I've got 20 other partners that that are actually giving me the time of day. Like I can't actually solve this problem unless you're going to invest in this way.
Well, and I think there's, and that's why I think there's actually a lot more commonality between what Jesse and Sam are saying than conflict. Because at the end of it, it's stop spending time with the ones that aren't producing any results, right? But I think one, we like set our own trap for ourselves a lot there, where partnerships by definition are harder and more bespoke, because it takes us figuring out this joint go-to-market message, how we fit each other into each other's go-to-market motions, moving people that are in defined processes to do something that's a little bit different potentially. And so what I find in what Sam had said, you did these high level agreements, you committed to taking some actions on a mutual action plan, and then nothing ever came of it. I like to have really short-term first projects with partners as a way to testing this. So that's especially mm-hmm. what I'm doing in our event series is, can we set a date for this in-person event? Can we put together a draft agenda that allows us to start marketing it? Will you actually start sending invitations? Because again, in our space on the enterprise side, we're going to get way more people from a one-to-one invite. And can you send me your draft content for us to stitch together? Can you take feedback from our input of what we're seeing from knowing the audience? And that gives me a 6 to 8 week window of a rapid project. Can we collaborate together at all? And if we can, fantastic. Now we know and we can get moving. But then that means in all of our quarterly reviews, monthly reviews, whatever we're doing, we have to have really specific actionable steps that everybody is taking. So that way it's not like big broad. When someone wakes up in the morning, they're like, what should I do? Like they know they can reference a very specific mutual action plan.
Agreed. Oh, go ahead. I can't hear you, Ariana.
Nope. I was gathering my thoughts on it because I'm also learning a lot through this as well. I mean, I stick in marketing and I help out on the partnership sides and the brand side a lot of the time. And that's where it's come through of like, oh, we're going to do this as a part of the partnership. And I assist with that. But where you all are talking about of what does success actually look like, making sure the partner is equally invested, that what your goals are very clearly defined with your partner, but then also like up into your organization. Because I feel like we've all been in a position where maybe you drop that company into the bottom 80 and then you get a message saying, why aren't they engaging? I expected more from this. And then you get to have that internal conversation about why they're in the bottom 80. But what I'd like to do now is kind of pivot and talk about some real world examples. I would love if you all could share an example of a partnership that has delivered high ROI. And what were the factors that contributed to its success? And this is any type of partnership. We've talked about co-selling, tech partnerships, and the co-marketing. What's the first one that comes to mind?
Adam and Sam are going to have way more of this than I did.
I can go. So my obvious answer is Salesforce. When I took over the partner program at PFL, we had like, I don't know, 25 partners. I broke up with a lot of them to my point, just because, you know, nothing was happening. And it was a lovely breakup. We're still friends, all of us. But with Salesforce, it was like, all right, we're seeing a little bit of traction here. And by really leaning in, like there was at one point where one Salesforce AE that I had become friends with invited 17 of her customers to a webinar that I did on our value prop. And my CEO saw that and he's like, do you know how long it would take a BDR to book 17 meetings with qualified opportunities? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, so how do we do more of that? And so we asked for more headcount and we really just made it a KPI to enable everybody that we possibly could in the Salesforce ecosystem. What that did for our business was it opened up new ICPs and use cases that we hadn't even thought about. And we had sourced 65% of close won revenue by the time I left there because the Salesforce team couldn't hear direct mail and not think of us. And that was the ultimate goal. Adam, what you got?
For me, I can't talk to how the partnership was formed of this one. But there was an organization called Operation Recovery. I think we can all remember the chaotic withdrawal. We do a lot of military government work. So we remember the chaotic withdrawal from Afghanistan and you know, a number of Afghan national partners of ours, of the United States, were left behind. And so there was an organization called Operation Recovery, a nonprofit that was raising money to help continue and is today still continuing to help get people out. But they needed a way to securely communicate so that their conversations weren't caught by the Taliban and bad things happen. And so I don't know how we got connected with them. But so then we did the setup of the secure cloud communications for it. And now thousands of people have been able to get out of Afghanistan that had worked with the United States. And they're continuing to operate that now. So like one, there's the really great ROI in terms of just the humanitarian element of that. But if we step aside from it for a second, from a sales perspective, we're talking about secure cloud a lot of the time. And we're talking about it with decision makers that don't necessarily understand all of the nitty-gritty details of cybersecurity, but they know the need, they know the impact if they don't have it. And it actually gives us a very good example of if we can do secure communications when lives are on the line, then we can do secure communications with your app migration, whatever that thing may be. And so it ends up having this really general just vibes impact on a sales motion where it allows people to check the box on, can these people do cybersecurity right? And then it goes over to the technical people where we then get into the technical conversations and they get what they need, but allows for both conversations. And otherwise, if we didn't have a project like that, convincing decision makers of our nuanced ability to really get cybersecurity done, this thing you can't really touch and feel, would be a lot harder.
I have to go. So yeah, that's a hard thing. Apple is weird. I'm going to have to use Apple, right? Because like Fluency is, I can't actually wait to answer Ferris's question because I'm literally the company he's talking about. Not literally, I'm the company he's talking about. We're not partners. I don't know Ferris at all. Anyway, so I have to use Apple as an example. But Apple is interesting because it is at its core an ecosystem company. The App Store is like probably the first and most successful ecosystem ever built. Mm-hmm. And so literally everyone who develops an iOS app and puts it into the App Store is by default an Apple partner in some way. And when they build only for Apple, that makes them even more of a partner. So now when you kind of flip that over into the enterprise space, which is where I worked, they didn't actually do a great job of highlighting those solutions outside of the app the App Store ecosystem, which I think is fascinating. Like Apple's enterprise function could have as big of an app exchange as Salesforce does, right? Just by literally like plucking them out of the App Store and putting them into an enterprise exchange. And then being able to, if there was like some kind of like rev share opportunity, anybody who's listening from Apple, like go ahead and take my advice on this. but the idea would be like enterprise customers buy solutions. They buy solutions to pain points. We're trying to solve this. It really hurts when we don't have that. This company solves it. I'm going to buy the solution. They're only interested in the way that it's delivered to their employees, like sort of after they've vetted the fact that the solution actually exists and does work. And so there wasn't like, I would say that all of those companies that were like, we build only on iOS and this is our solution. And then they would, you know, essentially force customer, not for, I'm using, they would essentially force customers to buy iOS by building only on iOS. But it wasn't, I think, until more recently that Apple like really started to dig into some of those solutions in terms of partnerships. And they certainly don't like advertise them or leverage them in the same way that other enterprise companies do, which I think is actually kind of a tragedy. So I don't have like a great, woo, awesome story of Apple, a direct partner of Apple's like making a huge influence. They're starting to emerge. But most of them, I'm trying to think of like IBM early on did they built like 100 enterprise apps in their like mobile first, initiative. And then what they realized was that enterprises like don't necessarily want to share solutions in the Fortune 500. They want to build a bespoke one, because they want theirs to be better than everyone else's. And it really only works like in some ways. But IBM drove, you know, a handful of customers to Apple through that, in particular industries. None of those things had anything to do with what I was doing. but I was doing what Sam was talking about, which is like going and enabling as many people as you possibly can at Deloitte and at Salesforce and at Accenture and like trying. But I don't know that I could point to any of that being directly useful in terms of revenue. Just a different animal.
Gotcha. And even some of what you may have been doing had a longer tail effect that you just weren't able to see because it happened.
Like possibly long tail. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and especially sometimes in the partnership games, as it is in brand, because that's where I spend a lot of my time in the house, is you're working on projects now that are going to have results in the longer term because it builds over time. I think the challenge that comes with partnerships is they're expecting you to leverage the brands that you're working with to create pipeline in a short amount of time. And so there's a higher cost associated with what you're doing. And Adam's nodding, so that lets me know I'm on the right track there. But the other thing I want to ask for you all is what are the trends that you guys are seeing coming up in the partnership space, and how is it going to impact the way that we select the partners that we work with, that we collaborate with companies?
I'll just say, I mean, this is a little bit repetitive, but partnerships are like the hot thing right now, which is great for all of us, but that can also be pretty detrimental if you're not super clear on like what and why you're building a partnership. So this goes for like, if you're applying for jobs, if you're all of a sudden hearing from your leadership, they want partnerships, like that's fantastic. But why? What are the goals and what are the resources and support that the company is willing to give so partnerships can succeed?
Yeah, I think in terms of maybe what's coming, one can only hope, Sam. One can only hope. In terms of what's coming, I think that partnerships is a weird, like particularly at like early stage startups, partnerships tends to come in around the B or C stage when everything is about scale. How do we scale this? How do we scale that? Right. And so what happens is partnerships comes in as this tiny little thing, and it's immediately being asked to be a scaled thing. And that's not really how it works. And so I think that like what's coming for partnerships is figuring out how to get partnerships like out of incubation and into scale in a faster way. That's just my opinion because I built a product for scaling partnerships. But like, I think that that there's a huge play for AI in partnerships as soon as companies start to like stop dabbling in AI and start actually finding solutions that really work and not just being like, hey, we have a chat bot in our product and look at how cool we are. I think that like as soon as we can, there will start to emerge some really interesting point solutions that leverage AI that don't look like AI or a chatbot. So I actually think there's a technology play here. But the hard part too, to Sam's point, is like, are there any resources for partnerships to actually go and get those things?
I think my favorite part of this is looking at, you've got three partnership people on the panel. You've got a CEO, you've got a chief growth officer, you've got a head of marketing and partnerships who's not on a chief partner officer path, who's on a chief revenue officer path. And here, there's no distinction for me when I'm doing some marketing or sales activity here. It's all partnerships is baked into every single conversation. And so the trend that I'm more interested in is how partnerships continues to get baked into the go-to-market process, and it becomes a part of it, that it's not a bolt-on. And I think with that also then helps what Jesse's describing of, if you don't give us the incubation period, if you just plug us in when you're ready to scale everything else and expect this thing to scale when you spent 3 years figuring out sales and marketing from pre-seed through stage B, and all of those crazy learnings, all the things that you did wrong before that helped you figure out and position you for where you are now, and like the magic that this one person, two people that you hired is going to bring to scale, like it's bonkers. Of course, it's not going to work. But this trend toward partnerships is go to market. It's not its own separate island.
Amen.
No, absolutely, Adam, because even some of the stats that we had heard in our previous roundtable was that most companies can generate 10%+ of their revenue with 5 people or less in partnerships. But what we don't hear in that stat is all of the time and other things that go into it as well. So I'm glad that we, again, because we looked at what was the state of partnerships, what is all of the data said if we just looked at it objectively, and now we have had the conversation with, of course, our practitioners. Okay, that's the data, but how does this actually work? What's actually needed? How do you identify your partners? How do you go to market? And then later this month, we are going to be having our third roundtable where we're going to have that discussion on the ecosystems and a bit more of that co-selling, a deeper dive into the co-selling angle of it. So if I had to bring this all back in based on what you've said for getting our initial question, how do you identify your best partners? It starts with a couple of questions for yourself. First, what are you building? Second, what are the resources that you need for it? Third, what are the partnerships that you need as a part of that? Fourth, what are your goals? And then five, are you communicating and equally invested internally and externally? Anything I missed in there?
Sounds pretty comprehensive.
Dig it.
And then a lot of blood, sweat, and tears.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. And that's why I want to make like one more call out for why partnership people make for the best CRO, the CRO that has to lead marketing, sales, customer success, support, all these other things. The partnership person does every single one of those things from a very early stage. They're the most prepared to lead a comprehensive go-to-market for one company because they've spent their career figuring out the more complex joint go-to-market for hundreds of companies.
Agreed.
So what I heard is open CRO role equals partnership experience. I got that wrong. Open CRO role plus partnerships expert equals profit. That's what I heard.
Absolutely. Because now the partner person has resources to do the things that,
that they never could everybody before.
Wants them to do.
Okay. Well, see, that goes back to the second part of this. What are you building? The resources. What do you need to accomplish that? And what partners do you need for it? But awesome. We're going to circle back to this question real quick, because I would love to get Sam and Adam's perspective on it. And if you guys have any other questions, now's the time. The Q&A is open. Ask them anything. They're here. Please make it related to partnerships, though. So here's the question for Adam and Sam. And this comes from Ferris, which was, from your experience, have you seen value in introducing your clients to a new integration, which really adds value to your solution with a specific use case, with a partner solution, but that company is very small and does not have many clients or brand awareness? So basically, should I risk my reputation to introduce them to someone that I think works well, but doesn't really have a good brand reputation of their own?
Heck yeah. Yeah. So here's where and why and how. Again, for us, caveating that this is large enterprise, we on the service side are product agnostic. I'm not going to market, while I may have a better partnership with AWS than other cloud providers, I'm not exclusive to any one provider. And as we look at requirements that are coming out, we're going to look at and propose what are the best products that are going to deliver the results that somebody needs. And in that evaluation process on our side, if we see that this smaller niche bespoke solution just has this huge impact on that final product or the final impact delivery, whatever, then we're going to be able to weave that into our story. And because we have this longer sales cycle, we can get strategic in bringing them into some co-marketing ahead of time, doing that multi-threading account planning so that they're having opportunities to independently get in front of the right people, that there is this influence campaign. And now we are set up for that proposal to be the best win impact. And especially when it's a tool that saves a lot of time against legacy tools that require more service time to get them going, that's one of the biggest ways that this small niche thing has huge impact, because now all of a sudden I can cut maybe hundreds of thousands of dollars out of my final delivery because of some value that I was able to bring them over here. And again, we're trying to do best win proposals. And so absolutely it has a place.
All right. Mic drop moment, Sam, or should we move on to the next question?
No, that was great. Jesse, you have lots of experience there. Anything to add? I don't need to put you on the spot, but.
No, you're fine. I just, my clear and obvious answer is, like, this is why small partner or small companies don't get to partnerships until B or C. Mm-hmm. It's because companies potentially like yours, I don't know if this is a real situation or not, but potentially like yours, are too afraid to talk about a solution that could be really awesome. So I guess my point is, like, why did you create the partnership with this company in the first place? Do you trust the person who's trying to deliver it? Have you looked at their product, and does it actually do what it says it's going to do? And then are they going to be there for you and your customer? And so, like, you want, if you're going to do this with a small company, make sure that the person, it's likely the founder that you're talking to, make sure that the founder understands the nature of partnership. Make sure they understand that value equality is necessary, or value equity, I guess. It's not really equality, but value equity. And that if you're going to introduce them, that they understand that your reputation is on the line, and that they want to own that and have integrity around it. I would just say, like, this becomes, with a smaller company, it becomes, do you trust the person on the other end to deliver what they say they're going to deliver?
And the only thing I'll add on to that is, this has happened to me in the past, and I actually brought my CTO to the call to, like, demo their product and see how the integration would work. And while I did trust the partner person on the other side, they were not a technical person. And so we did find some serious holes. And so validate this if it makes sense, of, like, if you're not a technical person, bring the right people in the room to have that conversation so that you don't put the customer at risk.
Good thoughts. All right. Our next question that we have is, what's your favorite metric to gauge the success of a partnership early on? What tells you this is on track to become what I envision it will become? And I think, Jesse, I'm going to throw this back to you because it was, it depends. Am I right? It was a direct quote from the chat. So we'll put you back on the spot.
Yeah, no, you're good. I think that it's touch points. Antonio, mm-hmm. if there's any way for you to like get into Gong and tag like partner conversations or tagging or, like getting alerts for conversations like at a partner, like between partner people. I know your organization is a little bit larger. And then if there's any way for you to have channels in Slack where you can see the conversations happening and have visibility into them. And then I don't know if there's any way to take like number of conversations and then port those into your CRM and then be able to track against like number of touch points and revenue. But I think that like partnerships at its core is a relationship, and relationships only happen with communication. Like there's no telepathy happening between companies. The only way to make things happen is to communicate with each other. Even if it's like, how was your kid's football game? Like, I know that seems really silly and stupid, but like those being able to just like relate on a human level goes so far when then the next thing you ask for is like, hey, we have a potential mutual customer here because like you gave a shit 2 minutes ago. Sorry, mm-hmm. transcript people have to look at that. My bad. It's my birthday. I'll say what I want.
That's yes. Right. For me, it's sweat equity. Can they deliver something? Can they put in not just the talk, not just signing a paper, that we're going to partner, not just have the great ideas, but can we agree to a thing and can we start seeing practical progress towards that thing? I don't care if it's co-marketing, co-selling, if it's, you know, some high level top of funnel brand thing, if it's a integration or some other thing in the customer success side, right? Like it doesn't matter, but can we on a Monday say we're going to do a thing and see actual progress happening on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday? Can we deliver something within that first month? And again, it's not that can we deliver revenue, but sweat equity. Let's make sure that we're all invested in this and we can actually get things done.
Man, Adam, that's so simple and so overlooked and will get you so far in life. Just do what you say you will.
Amen.
100%. Yeah.
I think that's the fastest way to get on a partnership's blacklist of, wow, they said they were going to do this and they didn't. And they were difficult to work with. Bottom 80. Sorry, man. Go on.
For sure.
Awesome. Well, thank you all so much for your questions and our wonderful audience. Thank you for our practitioners that are here. Next partnership roundtable that is happening is towards the end of this month about creating a partner ecosystem that turns data into high conversion referrals. So don't miss it. Be there. We'll have great more conversations and we'll catch up with everyone later. But for now, thanks for being here. Sam, Jesse, Adam, thank you so much. And happy birthday to everyone. This is all of our birthdays. Let's go celebrate.